the excellent throne of the King. Because of fear and obedience, no one could come forward to serve the Lord directly. Lord, I am the throne of Rene Hachibu. There was no one to protest. No enemy came forward on behalf of Rene Hachibu to fight with the Lord. This means that his supremacy was immediately accepted by the demons. Another point is that although Rene Hachibu treated the Lord as his bitterest enemy, he was the Lord's faithful servant in Vaikuntha, and therefore the Lord had no hesitation in sitting on the throne that Hiranyakashipu had so gloriously created. Srila Vishwanatha Thakur remarked that sometimes with great care and attention, great saintly persons and rishis offer the Lord valuable seats, dedicated with Vedic mantras and tantras. But still the Lord does not sit upon those thrones. Hiranyakashipu, however, had formerly been Jai, the doorkeeper at the Vaikuntha gate. And although he had fallen because of the curse of the Brahmanas and had gotten the nature of a demon, and although he had never offered anything to the Lord as Hiranyakashipu, the Lord is so affectionate to his devotee and servant that he nonetheless took pleasure in sitting on the throne that Hiranyakashipu had created. In this regard, it is to be understood that a devotee is fortunate in any condition of his life. Only Yet a devotee is fortunate in any condition of his life. Here, Hiranyakashipu had totally forgotten his real nature as the servant of the Lord in Vaikuntha, and for the pleasure of Krishna's pastimes as a Srinidhi, Jai became Hiranyakashipu. And as Hiranyakashipu, this former doorkeeper of the Lord in Vaikuntha, totally forgot his past or his original nature and became totally absorbed in the nature of a demon. In that way, he was sure to give the utmost pleasure to Krishna as a Srinidhi. Everything is for Krishna's enjoyment. Therefore, Krishna will not even fight with ordinary demons, such as you see existing today. When the world talks about demons today, the people they all would agree upon is, first Hitler. Oh yes, this month is the commemoration of the 50th anniversary of victory in Europe Day of World War II. So, many people are remembering the weapons of the past World War and discussing how it is that such a creature as Hitler could arise. Of course, that is the nature of materialists. They want to put all the blame on one extreme materialist, and that way everybody else feels saintly. Oh yes, Hitler, they're so bad. We can all see that. In other words, we are so dignified and forthright, but that Hitler, he was definitely the cause of all the ills of the world. Actually, Srila Prabhupada said that Stalin was a much greater demon than Hitler. Stalin was so mad, not only did he kill his enemies, but he killed millions of farmers because they wouldn't accept his plan for collective agriculture. And the result was, the very Russian people that Stalin was supposed to be in charge of, they were starving, but Stalin didn't care. They're not accepting my orders, kill them all. Millions of his own farmers. So, these are persons who the world recognizes as demons. And perhaps in later day, it's Saddam Hussein Shah, especially if you're living in the States, he's a demon. He dares to try to control the flow of the oil in the world. That's got to be demoniac. So, actually, these little toy demons are nothing compared with the demons that Krishna fights. In fact, Krishna won't fight those ordinary toy type of demons like Stalin or Hitler. To fight with Krishna, you have to be extraordinarily qualified. And that's why when a demon is killed by Krishna personally, that demon gets liberation into Krishna's effulgence. That effulgence you're hearing about in this verse. Some British age or some. Lord Shrinidhi was in full effulgence. Krishna has an effulgence. The Brahma Sahita states, Yasya Prabha. Prabhupato, Jagananda Gautam, Koti Sveshesha Vasudhari Bhutti Vinam, Tad Brahma Nishkanam Ananta Vasesha Bhutam, Govindam, Hari Purusham, Samamajami. The glaring effulgence, the great white light of oneness that so many transcendentalists think is so important, that is simply the glow of Krishna's body. The all pervasive Brahman oneness, which some people who are following authorized processes of Brahman realization, they worship or they want to merge with the fulgence. And then you get a lot of people today in hot spiritual cultures talking about the oneness, it's all one, and just lose yourself in the oneness and the drop merging into the shining sea. They're taking like a pop equivalent of vague information about merging into the Brahman effulgence. They don't know anything, but they just hear some amateur Indian teacher come from over the seas, or they read some book by Baba this or Baba that, and they get this idea in their mind, yes, it's all one, and when we merge with the oneness, it's all right. In fact, we're already merged with the oneness, so it doesn't matter what we do, because it's all one anyway. And but if you ask them, so you want to be like the drop that merges in the shining sea. You want to dissolve your individuality. Please demonstrate to me right now how you're doing that in your life. They cannot show you. Because in their life, they're spending from morning till night trying to taste the varieties of material existence. But just to be cool and sound a little quasi-spiritual, they make this pop talk about Brahman emerging. Yes, we are all one when we give up these artificial identities that we have and just lose all our individuality, then we go back to our original condition of undivided oneness. They talk like that, but in their life, they're playing around with so many varieties. Variety is the mother of enjoyment. That is a tented truth in the material world, and it is absolute truth in the spiritual world. In the material world, all the varieties are getting trouble. The living entity with its five senses and the mind, manasasthana jnani prakatisthana karshati, Krishna says that in Bhagavad Gita, you're struggling in the oppressive material atmosphere with the six senses, which include the mind. The mind, from the Vedic point of view, is also like a sense. The mind feels, and it feels basically a sense of intimacy with the material world. That's what we were trying to get at yesterday, explain to these people that what is it that makes them feel comfortable with ignorance? What is it that makes them feel all right, even though we have no knowledge, still we feel all right? This is the work of our illusory self. It's the false ego and the mind. And particularly through the mind, you feel a sense of intimacy with the material world. Like, I've got a lot of problems with this world, but it's home, it's my natural atmosphere, and I should attempt to swim through my natural atmosphere and try to be happy, and there'll be happiness, and there'll be some sadness, but basically it's all right. Whereas when you read Krishna conscious literature, you're hit at every page with the understanding, you're not at home, you're in a foreign environment, you need to wake up and get out of it. So, as we were saying yesterday, a lot of people feel a little uneasy about this urgency. What's the big deal? I'm doing all right now. I've had a lot of good times, and I can look forward to some good times. But what's the rush? They don't understand that they have a false sense of security, a false sense of intimacy with this world, a false sense of feeling comfortable in a place that they shouldn't feel comfortable in. Therefore, they do get a little ruffled under the collar, a little angry because, why are you guys so urgent? What's the big deal? Okay, you have your spiritual path. That's all right. It gets you over, gets you by. Everybody needs something like that, you know, your own little belief system, your own personal mythology to keep you, you know, in tune. But why do you have to feel so urgent about it? And moreover, why do you have to try to impart that urgency to others? So they say this because they don't understand who they are. They don't understand the original self, nor do they understand the false self that is impeding their actual true expression. Therefore, they talk about things like just listen to the voice within, open up your intuition. So I try to point out, well, which voice within are you listening to? Sometimes your stomach is gurgling, your lungs are coughing, your heart is beating. What exactly are you listening to? Generally, when they say listen to the voice within, listen to your intuition, it means stimulus of sense gratification that you want to follow at a particular moment, that's the inner voice. And anything that talks about discipline and sense control, well, that's not the inner voice. The inner voice always tells you to open up to all sensual experiences, not to restrict, just go with the flow. So, in this way, people don't understand why devotees feel so urgent. And devotees, on their part, are always trying to devise ways and means how to urgently teach these people and introduce them to Krishna consciousness. Because we have the greatest knowledge. We have the greatest information. But they're not seeing us in that way. They don't understand that we have huge numbers of books which discuss every aspect of existence. There's something about the material nature, it's the influence of the mode of ignorance, that causes people to be comfortable even though they don't know. In fact, they think that it's all right not to know because things are basically all right the way they are, and in order to get the basic gross pleasures, you don't need to know anything. When you try to impart to them that there's so much going on beyond the range of the senses, and every little action that they make has so many unseen variables dependent upon it. A lot of times they don't want to hear because they feel a little bit challenged and threatened. So what a devotee tries to do is gradually or immediately try to impart to these people real understanding. A devotee tries to show these people that Krishna conscious knowledge is their best friend. It's not their enemy. It's something to be fearful of. They'll feel more happy to understand themselves better if they know the information that's given in Srila Prabhupada's books. It's their best friend. So in order to get to that understanding, they need association of devotees. Because it's a rare person who, simply by getting the books without any devotee association, will kind of establish themselves on the spiritual plane. It doesn't happen, but most people, they need some coaxing, they need some assistance to show how these books are their best friend. And that means we as devotees have to make the books our best friend. We want to teach people so that whether Krishna makes a huge disturbance in the world or not, in order to rectify the present material civilization, we want to be doing our job to administer to the people's needs, to give them education. So the Prabhupada wanted to create a class of Brahmins. Brahmins mean, to be a Brahmin means you know and you teach. And you devise so many educational methods, so many festivals, so many classes, so many devices, so many places to teach so that people will understand that real knowledge is their best friend. Krishna conscious knowledge is what they can depend upon. So that's what we're trying to do. So people like the Brahmin effulgence, they think. They really don't know what Brahmin is. They just talk about it. But here in this verse, you read, Lord Nishikhev is manifesting a full effulgence. Grumman Effulgence is all pervasive. The material cosmos, all the material universes, simply occupy an insignificant section of the impersonal Brahman. In some insignificant corner of the Brahman effulgence, there is the entire material creation. And beyond this all-pervading Brahman effulgence, there is the spiritual world. So a devotee gets a full sense of both material and spiritual existence. You can see the whole thing in perspective. So we were trying to explain to these people yesterday was that they cannot see the whole thing in perspective. They can only see a few centimeters in front of their nose, and yet they're content to go on like that. And that is the greatest tragedy. So we want to wake them up, either immediately or gradually, depending on the individual speed of a person. And in this way, we're doing very solid service for Krishna, very solid service for Srila Prabhupada. But of course, we have to wake ourselves up first. We have to be alive with knowledge, and then they'll feel that. When they come to our centers, when they come to our restaurants, when they come to our festivals, and they feel these people are alive with knowledge, they're showing me that to know is good, to know is fun. Then they want to also know. Otherwise, as some of you might have seen yesterday, there's a deep undercurrent due to the modes of nature which causes people to think knowledge is painful. Yes, to know is to not enjoy. When you know so much so that you won't partake in the pleasures that everybody likes, that knowledge can't be good. Therefore, they have this illusion that a Krishna conscious teacher is a killjoy, that we have nothing to do with pleasure, and that our life, we know a lot. Yeah, these guys have got a lot of metaphysical information, but they just don't know how to have a good time. They think ignorance is bliss. I mean, you've all heard that statement before, but people actually think that way subconsciously. Ignorance means things are all right, I'm not challenged in any kind of way, and nothing's going to separate me from my feverish attachment to the objects of the senses. They think that's all right. So they don't see how it is a devotee can be happy, because a devotee is not doing what they're doing. Therefore, they tell themselves, yeah, I'd like to hear from these guys. It's interesting. Exotic group, interesting talks, interesting food, but what are these guys doing in the core of their hearts, in the core of their lives? So, we want to show them that Krishna conscious knowledge is friendly. Just like computer software companies that make programs for computers, they have to go through a huge endeavor to convince people that their products are what they call user-friendly. Those of you who are computer addicts, you know that term before. They don't want people to feel intimidated by computers. Therefore, the computer industry went through so many years of propaganda and advertising to make everybody think to have a computer is no big deal. It's part of the home. Every child needs one. It's fun. It's easy. So we are doing the same. We want to show people that Krishna conscious information is user-friendly. It's your best friend, what you can depend on. Just like these verses we've been hearing the past few days, you get so much broad metaphysical information about this universe. Just reading about Lord Rishikesh's anger, you read that airplanes were thrown into outer space. And then, of course, Prabhupada explains in the purport that, yes, airplanes were always existing long, long ago. In fact, millions of years ago, the Vedic civilization included all the advanced arrangements we have today and even more. So, you learn that kind of a thing. And then you, in the coming verses, you'll hear about the demigods crowding the sky in their airplanes, desiring to see the activities of Lord Vishrinadeva. And they're playing musical instruments, and the angelic women are beginning to dance, and the Gandharvas, they're singing sweetly. You get a whole universal picture of what's going on the different planets in celebration of Lord Nisringadae's victory. And then you'll hear about the demigods approaching Lord Nisringadae. You'll hear about Brahma, Indra, and Lord Shiva approaching him. And the residents of all the different planetary systems with their different varieties, they're all coming near to Lord Nisringadae, who is glowing with an intense light. And they're offering prayers and obeisances. So the Bhagavatam is teaching you the geography and sociology of the universe, but it's doing that with Lord Nisringadae's anger in the center. And what about Lord Nisringadae's anger? You see, the Absolute Truth has everything. And that means anger too. Nothing can compare to the anger of the Absolute Truth, cause of all causes. And these verses, you get a feeling for that. As Lord Nisringadae slays Hiranyakashipu, you feel this inconceivable outpouring of transcendental anger from the Supreme Absolute Truth. Everything is there in its perfect situation in Krishna. Perfect anger. Anger that causes an increase in eternity, knowledge, and bliss. So that all the devotees are always rejoicing about Lord Krishna's anger. Whatever Krishna does, it is perfect and unlimited. Therefore, as Lord Nisringadae, Krishna becomes unlimitedly and perfectly angry. And we read some of the effects of that anger. Airplanes are thrown into outer space. The upper planetary system was put into disarray by the hair on Nisringadae's head. Because of the pressure of the Lord's lotus feet, the earth appeared to split from its position, and all the hills and mountains sprang up due to this intolerable force. Because of the Lord's bodily effulgence, both the sky and all directions diminished in their natural illumination. So some people today are talking about coming earth changes and how the world is due for severe geological disturbances. So here you see, it's happening due to Lord Nisringadae, and in the previous purport, Prabhupada writes that just as Nisringadae kills Hiranyakashipu in a few moments, similarly, if this present demonic civilization does not correct itself, within a few seconds it can all be tumbled by some arrangement of Krishna. Krishna doesn't have to come to upset the demonic arrangements of this world. Simply a few strong winds, a few tidal waves, a few earthquakes, and everything comes down. And Prabhupada guarantees that in his purport, that in no way will Krishna tolerate materialistic civilizations living in complete disregard of the laws of God. In no way will Krishna allow such civilizations to continue. That is something that we as devotees have to be confident in. That you don't want to be lulled to a false sense of sleep and security like materialists who think, oh, it's all right, things will always go on, things will always get better, there'll be some problems, there'll be a few disasters like Cave Creek every once in a while, but basically, you know, think life is just going to go on. No, it is impossible for there to be peace and prosperity without understanding what the mission of the human form of life is. This year, people are celebrating the 50th anniversary of World War II. During that war, between 48 million and 60 million people died, or to speak of, many more were wounded. Has the world changed at all since then? Does anybody look like they've learned their lesson? No. Therefore, one journalist came up with a very good statement. He said, what you call peace is simply a time of cheating between wars. Peace is a time of cheating between two wars. So between World War II and the next war, this isn't even a time of cheating in which everybody pretends that there's peace. But actually, in just January of this year, analysts who are looking at the whole global situation counted 100 wars. 100 wars in January of this year. Of course, we all know it's not a real war until one of the civilized Western countries is involved. end of the war. But otherwise, it's just some disturbance over there in Chechnya or Turkey or someplace amongst uncivilized people. But when, you know, the States or the UK or Australia, New Zealand, and oh, that's a war. What are we going to do? But there actually has never been peace. And there cannot be peace as long as people are falsely occupying a position they're not intended for. And this is what we're trying to gently impart to people. The understanding that they're occupying a false position. They don't belong where they are. They shouldn't be doing what they're doing. So we're, in so many ways, trying to give them a feel for that falsity that they're embracing. Here we have Nishinide uprooting Hiranyakashipu from his throne. Nishinide is right in the assembly house of Hiranyakashipu and sitting down on the super excellent throne of Hiranyakashipu. Hiranyakashipu, described in the purport, has so laboriously created this extraordinary throne. Now, in a few moments, he is dead, and Lord Nishinide is sitting on that throne. The throne is actually meant for Lord Nishinide. Hiranyakashipu is wrongfully occupying it. So it's just a matter of time. It was just a matter of time until Nishinide took the throne back. Similarly, it's just a matter of time before the present civilization have their false throne removed. Of course, as devotees, we're compassionate. We'd like that the people give up their false throne voluntarily. At the same time, we know that Krishna knows best. If it proves that people are so stubborn, or if it's simply that it'll help bring them to a higher understanding more quickly, then Krishna will send disturbances to shake them up, to make them think, oh, we didn't belong on this throne after all. Someone else is in control. Just like, for example, after the Cave Creek mini disaster, where 14 students lost their lives, some of the journalists were writing their conclusions, well, I guess once again we're going to have to realize the power of nature and how insignificant we are against the power of nature. And then particularly they began to glorify the untamed beauty of the West Coast. This just goes to show you that the West Coast of the South Island just can't be had. It's the wild wilderness. And so they were speaking like that with awe and reverence. Yes, the West Coast, the wild untamed West Coast. What can you do? It's just part of one of the opulences of New Zealand, and I'm just going to have to accept it in that way. Yes, some people are going to die, but the main thing is we should all have this reverent attitude, understanding the glories of that wild frontier of the West Coast. So, you see that when there is some shake-up, then people start to think. Obviously, that was just a little shake-up. But when there are huge shake-ups, then they want to get to the bottom of it. So it is Krishna's mercy that he sends huge shake-ups. But without knowledge, these huge shake-ups won't have their complete effect. Therefore, whether they're huge shake-ups or not, we want to go on with our educational attempts, full steam ahead. Then people will have a chance to know why things are happening. And they'll gradually appreciate us very much for that. These Hare Krishna people, they know so much, and they're willing to share their knowledge. There's so much in Srila Prabhupada's books. Prabhupada's books cover everything that they could ever be concerned with. And by associating with the devotees, they'll get a feel for that. Yes, by hanging out with you all, I'm in touch with knowledge. I'm in touch with people who are consciously trying to live in the most educated way, in the most knowledgeable way. So Prabhupada desired that the social systems of mankind become affected by the knowledge of the devotees. It's not far-fetched. It's not pie in the sky. Krishna is the cause of all causes. Krishna is the supreme enjoyer and controller. So, although our numbers are few, we're on the right side. Of course, everybody says that God is on my side. Everybody says like that. Well, that's why we have this knowledge to authoritatively describe what the real side is like. Yes, it's true, so many people have run around the world saying, God's on my side. Just like in the Crusades, when the Muslims and the so-called Muslims and the so-called Christians are fighting one another, the Muslims roaring to attack, yelling, Allah Akbar, God is great, submit to God. The Christians roaring to attack against them, saying, God's will, it's God's will, it's God's will. So that's what people unfortunately think. Ireland, where the Protestants and Catholics are fighting, they think, actually, the more devoted you become, the more a disturbance to the world you become. Just like one lady yesterday was saying. If there's going to be any kind of spiritual knowledge I'm interested in, it's got to involve no rituals. Think that the particulars and the specifics of Krishna consciousness will cause dissension. They think that our particular scientific methods for pleasing Krishna, they think that these spiritual varieties will disturb people. That is not so at all. It's just that because Krishna is a person, Krishna has particular ways he likes to be pleased. Of course, if you question them about their own existence and their likes and dislikes, they'll be very happy. Oh, you're asking me about my likes and dislikes. Oh, let me tell you. Yes, I like that, I don't like this, I don't like that. They'll never hear anything about it. It's all one, don't worry. They'll never say that. No, they'll be very specific and very careful to explain to you what they like, and they hope that you'll be able to supply what they like. But when it comes to Krishna, the cause of all causes, all these different things you're doing to try to please Krishna, you're just inventing them in your mind. What do these things have to do with God, with the Supreme? We feel like that because of envy. Hiranyakashipu was the personification of envy against Krishna. He could not tolerate that Krishna is in control. Therefore, as we were describing yesterday, Hiranyakashipu would look towards the sky with such anger and with such intense meditation. He was thinking, I will destroy Krishna, and I will destroy that spiritual sky up there. He was so angry that when he looked at the sky was smoke and smolder. So envy against Krishna. He was just 100% envy against God and personified. Yet, we all have traces of that enviousness in us. Why should everything go to Krishna? We have to examine our hearts and see a little trace of that there, perhaps. Why should everything go to Krishna? What about me? Why should I really give up my sense gratification? What am I going to do if I give it all up? And does Krishna really exist? To answer those questions, a devotee cannot rest, cannot be lazy. Otherwise, we will be covered over by the Vishu energy, which causes us to take it easy, and then we lose our natural sense of urgency. And when we lose our natural sense of urgency, we lose sensitivity towards the practical existence of Krishna. Then Krishna becomes some vague, theoretical, fuzzy concept in our mind, and we sink deeper and deeper into the modes of nature. But if we're always alive with service, then we'll always be alive with realization that Krishna exists. We all accept God. Everybody does. Everybody here accepts there is a God. There's no doubt about that. But the full implications of that acceptance, that's where the problem is. How much is Krishna really in control? How much does Krishna really know? How much am I really beholden to Krishna? That's where the problems come in. So Krishna consciousness is the art, science, and culture of how to be sensitive to Krishna at every moment. That's where the joy of a devotee comes from. We're happy that we are becoming more and more sensitive to Krishna's desires and existence. It's not theory, it's not a dream. In fact, we're waking up from the dreamlike material existence. So all the things that people are afraid of, that they're going to be involved with simply some dogma, pointless rituals, exotic cultural trappings, all these things we can easily refuse. The more they associate with us, the more they hate the knowledge from Parah that we are presenting. These funny ideas in their heads will go away. But actually, it's good once that they think like this, because it gives us a lot of service to do. So many books to be distributed, so many Harinam parties to be seen and heard, so many festivals to be attended. We have a lot to do by Krishna's grace because people think in that way. And therefore, because they think in that way, we have a great opportunity to become dear to Krishna. By counteracting their ignorance, by counteracting their phobias and fears and paranoia, we will become recognized by Krishna. And that's what every devotee wants. He wants Krishna to be satisfied with his or her service. So let us not forget the graphic description of Lord Nityananda's anger. This is God. Anger in perfection. Unlimited anger. You can't conceive of unlimited anger. Everyone knows what it's like to be angry just a little. And you've seen some demonic displays of anger in this world. But unlimited anger? That you have to look to Lord Nityananda to get an idea. Pure spiritual anger without limit. And all the demigods are rejoicing and applauding and playing drums, and the angelic women are singing, and flowers are coming from the sky, all in celebration of Lord Nityananda's unlimited and pure spiritual anger. So everything is there in Krishna. The people, they like to be angry. You know, actually, a lot of people like to be angry. And many psychologists will tell them that when you feel something bad happens to you, you should be angry. That's the sign of a healthy psyche, that you vent your anger. I don't like this. You should have done that to me. Psychologists are telling people, you should get it out like that and be honest and lay your chest bare. Don't lock it in. Just be natural and express it. Of course, so much of music that people like today is a raw expression of anger, and people are, oh, very nice, how angry you are. Listen to those angry sounds your guitar is making. Wow. How refreshing. But how can their display of anger compare to Lord Krishna today? There is unlimited, pure spiritual anger, which is a benefit to the whole universe. Whereas the anger of a conditioned soul has absolutely no benefit for anybody. In fact, it causes severe reactions. So people, they like anger. They don't want to see the world without anger. Then you look towards Lord Nityananda, the perfect manifester of anger. And you think, comfort them. Don't worry. When you come to Krishna consciousness, you won't have to forget about anger. You can celebrate Lord Nityananda's appearance day and just glorify the unlimited display of pure anger. All the things you like, you won't miss. You'll just see them in perfection. Krishna consciousness has romance. Krishna is a supreme romancer. Krishna consciousness has sporting. Krishna and Balaram is the best sportsman. Fighting is there. Krishna has so many incarnations, as well as Krishna himself fights with the demons. All these things that we can do, they're done perfectly and unlimitedly by Krishna. But when we do that, there's so many problems. We all know. When we try to have romance, when we try to establish this relationship or that relationship, there's always some problem. When we try to fight, there's problems. We try to play sports, there's problems. I mean, if you're a native Kiwi, you probably don't realize it, but for a foreigner to come here and see all these sports doctors and sports medicine players, whatever it is, it's quite amazing. So the boy likes to play rugby and bang themselves up, and that's the result of their sporting, that their body is injured in so many ways. So all these things we try to do and create problems, Krishna does without any problems. In fact, with unlimited pleasure. Therefore, a devotee is one who recognizes, whatever I want to do, Krishna does it better. Let me glorify Krishna. And in that way, I'll get my happiness. It's scientific. So, any questions?
Arjun, in a way, when somebody is sick, I feel like trying to help anybody else. And in the price of Krishna consciousness, that's why it's still under these conditions on itself. There's a process of trying to help other people purify themselves as well.
Oh, yes. The quickest way to get over the disease is to try to help others in their disease, but you must do that in an authorized way. That's why we have temple presidents and senior devotees. So they can teach the younger devotees, although you are still having some disease, if you simply engage in this authorized missionary activity in an authorized way, it will help you get over the disease. But it has to be supervised by an experienced doctor. But yet, when one is feeling, when a devotee is following the prescribed process of chanting properly and sadhana, and still he may think, or she may think, oh, I'm feeling a little down, I'm feeling like I'm starting to get covered over. If that devotee in an authorized way goes on trying to help others, that's the easy way to come out of illusion. Because the work of helping others and teaching others is so dear to Krishna that Krishna will give you special help. Because Krishna said in the Gita, Masatisma Manushesu Kashin Maitriya Krittama. There's no one more dear, nor will there ever be one more dear than one who tries to spread my glory. But the whole thing needs to have to be done in an authorized way, not whimsical. And that's why we have senior devotees. Spiritual Master, Srila Prabhupada's books, Srila Prabhupada's instructions, so that we will get over our disease in an authorized way. But the worst thing to do, and any temple president can tell you this, the worst thing to do when you're feeling like the loosening energy is going to swallow you up is to sit tight and do nothing and think you're going to be safe. No, you've got to step out and be challenged. That's the time to increase your service. Because the material energy is challenging you. All right, Bhaktin so-and-so or Bhakta so-and-so, you really think you're going to make it as a devotee? Take this. And your brain just fills up with lusty activities and all sorts of material desires. Oh, I'll never make it. Then it's time to increase your own challenge. All right, you say to material energy, you're turning all this pollution on me full stream, I will increase my service. As soon as you do that, you notice immediate results. So that's why it takes guidance, because an older devotee can point that out to you, that when you're feeling like you're about to go down, that's an opportunity to make a bigger step ahead. But the worst thing to do is just, oh, I just feel like I'm going into Maya. I feel like I'm really getting covered over. Oh, you start lamenting, you lock yourself up in the Brahmacharya, Brahmacharya Ashram, or in your house, and just, oh, what will become of me? I might as well right now start thinking about my going back to material life. I hate to do it, but I might as well start thinking about it right now. I want to be a devotee, but it's just not working out. I'm not getting along with anybody. No one really appreciates me. They don't let me listen to the voice within. That's the worst thing to do, is to lock yourself away like that. But instead, if you humbly approach someone who knows, they can invigorate you. You're feeling like this? Don't sit and rock. Do this. Do that. Do this service. Do that service. And you'll feel an upliftment. And then you'll get great realization of the wonders of devotional service. I remember myself, I was a young devotee. I had been a full-time sankirtan devotee, and back then that meant 7 days a week, since I was a 3-week devotee, and spent 2 years day in, day out, day and night on Spankathon, Shabbat, Spankathon. And then, meanwhile, back at the temple, there were some problems which happened in any organization, any institution. So we were just young brahmacharis out traveling all the time, and we were thinking, oh, just see, here we are out on the road trying to surrender all in all to Krishna, and meanwhile, back at the center, they had some big problem with one of the big persons there, and for those of you who know Prabhupada's Lamas, it was the famous Balimardhan problem. Anyway, I don't want to go into that, but naturally, as a young devotee, you know, we were just feeling a bit shattered, like, you know, because actually, of course, part of Prabhupada's glory is tied up in this. We were working hard, collecting money for a new building in New York. So, and then it turned out that the, you know, I mean, loose energy is strong. We have to be practical about these things. It is possible for devotees to become diseased again due to this practice. So anyway, the devotee who was in charge of the project, he had some very severe problems, very severe. So we were thinking, just see, we've been working hard for 2 years, collecting all this money, and now, who knows, you know, where it's gone. So then we found out that Srila Prabhupada had requested this devotee of a loan to buy the Juhu Beach Temple in Bombay. He said, he wrote a letter, will you please send me a loan of $100,000? So the person very dutifully said, yes, of course, Prabhupada, every day, temple will be pleased to lend you $100,000 that you're collecting for the New York building. So then later, when it came time for the loan to come back, that devotee wrote, so Prabhupada, okay, Prabhupada, we're now ready to buy the building, and can you please send the money back? And Prabhupada simply sent a message back, what? You have given me this money to your guru, and I have to pay back. So we didn't know that, you know, we were in some anxiety. So Prabhupada just bought the land for the Juhu Beach property, and, you know, considered, you know, everything was fine. So anyway, I was becoming very cynical. All the authorities, who's really running the movement, what are the authorities really up to, who knows really what's going on, but this one, oh. Does he get his money from? Is he really saintly? And then I started listening to, you know, devotees who are not very well engaged in social service, but who seem to know every little cough and hiccup that went on in every part of the globe. Did you hear about what happens in Africa with someone's okay? Oh! Did you hear what happens in Philippines with someone's okay? So I saw myself just becoming resonant in devotional service. So then I remember Prabhupada telling one devotee in Haridas in Bombay, you can go to any temple where is my vision. My Vyasa-san is there. I'm there. So I said, all right, this is, I really feel Maya starting to tear me away. I'm a three-year-old devotee, and I'm getting too big for my britches. You know, I'm forgetting the simplicity of pure engaging devotional service, trying to mind everybody's business, and trying to analyze this and that, becoming cynical. What are the leaders really doing? Are they really saintly? Is he really chanting his ram? What's really going on? So I just went into the temple room, and just 3 days ago, I just crashed down in front of Prabhupada Vyasa-san to say, please give me pure faith. Please give me pure faith. And then, in 3 days, it was gone. It was like I never thought I'd have before. So when we have these kind of challenges, which we all will get in one way or another, there'll be marriage problems, you won't get along with this authority, or you feel like you're not being noticed or appreciated, or on and on and on it goes. You're sick and you can't do as much service, no one knows that. But if you take these opportunities as a chance to surrender more to Krishna, you'll be shocked at what happens. Is the nature of the majority to challenge you from time to time? Make, of course, here you have such wonderful authority, you don't have to worry about that. But Maya will come up with something else. Don't be romantic about it, it will happen. But if you know how to engage in emotional service, full steam ahead, you'll always be safe. Any other questions? All right, all glory to God.